Hola.
Good morning.
Hola, mi amigo.
Bien.
Bien, bien, bien.
It's
We're going
Harley's
to kick.
birthday today.
Oh, happy
Yeah.
birthday, Harley.
We've had her for 7 years, but she's probably 2 years when we got her.
So she's nine.
Yeah, she's nine.
Mabel, come here. I gotta put a party hat on you. So are all her doggy friends coming over later today?
Don't know, she's upset with me because I haven't walked her yet.
On her birthday.
Yeah, and then usually I take her to get breakfast if I go get breakfast in the morning, and she wouldn't get out of bed, so I left without her. She was mad at me, so she's not happy with me right now.
Oh man.
Yeah, but I told her I'd give her a walk as soon as we're done here.
You have to make it up to her later.
Yeah.
That's funny. So yeah, I think so we won't have Rob with us today, it looks like.
Yeah, it seems to be the norm.
Yeah, I was looking back and I think it must have been early June that all three of us were together.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, though, in the summertime, especially.
Yeah, which actually having the three of us, it's more made it that we have an episode instead of just not
Yeah.
having one, 'cause when it was just you and I, that tends to happen in the summers.
Yeah.
But
And with three people, at least maybe two of us could keep the engine running.
yeah, keep the fire burning.
Yeah. REO Speedwagon. One of my favorite bands of all time. High Infidelity, I must have played that tapes like thousands of times. Keep the
Yeah, what's
Fire
the.
Burning isn't on there. That came later.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I know some of their songs, but I don't really know their albums.
Yeah. My dad made this like contraption. He had a Ford pickup, and we'd go on these long trips, and he made these like comfortable beds in the back, and he routed the speakers so he didn't have to hear them to the back, and then he put the cassette player in, and High Infidelity and Pyromania were played like so many times on the way to Florida. Imagine driving. And the Beatles, one I can't remember the Beatles, but it was like their greatest hits. I remember it was a white album, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Well, there is the Beatles' White Album, which is one of their proper albums.
I know, but it's not
But
that
yeah,
because
but that's.
this had everything on it. Like, this had all their hits.
Yeah.
Don't think their white album's like a greatest hits, right? It's a regular
No,
album.
it's a regular. It was double length though. It's extra long, but it was a proper new album. But yeah, I know they had. This was probably after the fact though, because I know my dad had. They had the Red Album and the Blue Album, what they called them, which were two greatest hits collections. I think one of them was the first half of their career, and this other one was the second half of their career. But those were CDs, so that was later.
Yeah. For me, it's Let It Be. I love that album. Oh my God, do I love that thing. I could play it over and over again, like, and not get sick of it.
Yeah.
She said, "Happy birthday, Harley."
Yeah. I can know what she's doing. She's standing on her bed. She's standing on her bed looking out the side window at the,
Ah.
like, there's probably somebody walking down the sidewalk. So it's funny. I've been outside and seen that, and it's like, It's just this, it's a small window, so you just look up and there's this little dog head in the window. He's staring at you.
From the first floor or the second?
Second floor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
So you're like in a neighborhood, like you have a house right next to you on both sides. Yeah.
Yeah. It's suburban, but we do have sidewalks and stuff.
Yeah. And you know where I live in a cul-de-sac, which is kind of nice. You have less traffic. Well,
Yeah.
less through traffic, I'll say. We have a lot of traffic, but
It goes by the outside of the
yeah.
cul-de-sac. Yeah. Yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, our street's kind of a cut through, but not really. I mean, on one end of the street is kind of a major road, but the other end isn't really. You kind of have to, you kind of have to drive through several streets in that on that side. So, we get some through traffic, but not a ton.
Yeah. Can't believe the Bills lost last week, man. That was so close.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game, but I
Dang it.
was
Me and Barb were
curious as to the
watching it.
result.
Surprisingly, we were watching it because Barb did was too nervous to watch her own team because it was close too, but they played good, man. I mean it. I don't think they're gonna win that division for sure, but I think they're at least a above average team.
That's good. People
Yeah.
around here will be happy. If you go anywhere on Sunday, if I go anywhere on Sunday, it's just Bills shirts everywhere. People are pretty obsessed around here.
And over here, everybody's depressed because the Broncos are 0-4, which I like so much. I don't like them at all. It's one of those t
usually
teams I like to watch so they can root against the other team. I like when they're miserable, when people are miserable because they make like the media makes it so over, I don't know, like when they're even mediocre, they make them like they're superstars. Do you know what I mean? But when they're losing and stuff, they tend to just not show it. Like it just oh, the Broncos played and lost again. They don't say nothing. I'm not a fan of Elway. It goes back to Elway, so. And
Yeah,
now he's
usually.
running things, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's at the head office.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember those days, but yeah, I mean, usually the cycle here is everybody finds reasons to get real optimistic at the beginning of the season, and the first few games go well, and then it starts to turn.
Yeah.
And you see, like, on Sundays, you see less and less people around with Bill shirts on and stuff. But, I mean, there's a lot of diehards, though, so
Yeah.
no matter what.
I have a Bills jersey, and guess whose name it has on the back? I wish it was somebody you'd guess, but he won't guess it. So I'll tell
Okay.
you. It's Travis Henry, who
Oh,
was a running
interesting.
back who came to Denver and then went to prison. So it's not like I could flaunt it. It's not like somebody who left the franchise and did well or rep
Yeah.
represented well. I
That's
mean, I have a
funny.
Favre jersey too because I like the Packers, but
No, I know that name though. I mean, I remember when he was playing here.
I just wish I had a like somebody that at least was decent and didn't have like a bad reputation,
Right.
even locally, because his bad reputation came when he came to Denver.
Yeah,
So
like
it's
not
like,
like
yeah, it's like holy mackerel. But you invest a lot in those jerseys are expensive, like the official NFL ones,
Right.
and it's kind of sucks to have one that's like tainted. Like I would have loved to have like a Kelly or a Bruce Smith or you know any of the big ones, Andre Reed or James Lofton, because that was when I got into them, all because of
Yeah.
Lofton. I love James Lofton, but those were the prime years, man. They were disappointing years, but God, I love to watch them because they were just fun. That no huddle offense, man, it was just fun to watch. It moved the game fast too. It was like a it paced it like really well.
I'm old. I was old enough to remember those days and be caught up in it.
Yeah, and then
But
the other years were decent, and we had some decent years. The Phillips years, I thought they were okay. I don't think they should have got rid of him. I kind of liked him, but they mismanaged the Flutie situation, I swear. They put the other guy back in, and he had all the momentum. I would never, as a coach, if I had a quarterback that was leading me into the playoffs, I would stick with him. No matter how much I was paying the other guy, he's getting me to win. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would just not all of a sudden put another quarterback in. Even if there was upper pressure, I just couldn't, like, ethically do it because my momentum is with this guy. Yeah, if he screws up, I'll switch him out, but not if he, otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
I used to pay more attention, but I don't know, like the culture around football has kind of turned me off from it.
Yeah. Have you
So
been to the stadium ever?
yeah,
Yeah.
once when I was a kid and once like maybe a decade ago or something like
Ah,
that.
cool.
I didn't really have a good time either time though. I mean, when I was a kid, all I remember is being frozen. Like it was just
Yeah.
so cold. And neither time did I go at the beginning of the season or anything like that. And then the time I went like a decade ago or so, I mean, it was nice because I went for free because somebody had an extra ticket and they needed somebody to go.
Yeah.
But that was part of where I actually kind of got started to get like turned off because people were just so drunk and sloppy, and I almost got in a fight with a guy who was like stepping on my chair, and it was just
Just a
gross.
bad
I mean, the whole
experience, yeah.
Environment was just, I mean, I know they have like some family sections you can sit in and
Yeah.
stuff, but for in general, like just the whole culture around football is just kind of gross. So
My experience is it's not comfortable for sure. Like, to me, the steep. I love to go to baseball games. Like that's my thing, and I think it's because of the pacing. I think it's because the chairs are spread out a little more. You feel more crowded at a football game. It's freaking cold. Like you're uncomfortable. Your butt's cold. I mean, you're usually in like a lot of jackets. You're just not comfortable. And it's like elbow to elbow, It's just not. So even though I've been to like three games, I still don't like have a desire. I'd rather stay home and watch it. But if it's a baseball game, I'm there. I love to watch baseball like live. I don't watch it so much on TV, but I just love it live.
Yeah, I like going to baseball games, and the environment is a lot different usually.
Yeah.
Like most of the time, if I've been at a baseball game and somebody's really like sloppy drunk or like shouting profanity or something like that, like usually the fans kind of say something, you
Yeah.
know, like they're kind of like peer pressured into
But when it's
getting
a
their act
mob,
together.
yeah, when it's a mob mentality, it's not that way.
But at football games, like in my
Yeah.
experience, forget about it. Like most people are too drunk themselves to know what the hell's going on or whatever. So, and it's not like I'm like conservative about language or anything like that, but I just in public places, I feel like it's not appropriate, you know?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, sports.
So I've been trying to Well, I should be reading my novel, but I've come up with another th I've come up with another thing. I'm trying to watch an old movie every other week, or at least
That's
once a
cool.
month. And I'm sort of picking them from like Turner Movie Classics, because I like that station. Like they play silent movies, they play every kind of movie, and they play it commercial free. That's the big thing. So like I can record it on the DVR and then watch it later, and without having to fast forward through the commercials. And I watched Bride of Frankenstein for the first time, which was amazing. And then that's kind of like when I said I really need to watch older films. And last night, Barb and I watched Farewell to Arms, which was an Ernest Hemingway adapted film. And it was good, but it's so like there are things in there I don't understand. Like it, I read the book as a kid and I didn't like it. So I thought, if I see it now, I did a book report on it. And I really wish I didn't, because it was, I don't know, as a kid, I must have done it like in middle school. So I didn't like the book at all, but I forced my way through it and made my, I was able to do it. And back then they didn't have Cliff Notes, so I could cheat. Nor did I know there was a movie, and I didn't have a recorder to record a movie, and there were no VHS tapes. So I had to read the book and write a book report on it, and I didn't remember much about it other than I didn't like it. But it's a World War One. It has Gary Cooper and some of the actress I didn't recognize. It was from the 30s, and it's a World War One story about this one guy who seems like a medic. Like he never carries a gun, but he's always on the front line. But they don't really show him doing like heroic things. Like he comes back and he falls in love with a nurse, and I guess it's frowned upon at the time. And I'd have to do research for the soldiers to form any kind of relationships with the nurse. Like if they did, they would like ship the nurse off elsewhere, So I don't know what that was about. And like marriage, they wouldn't allow one to marry. Like there was a weird scene in there where he got injured. He went to the front line. He was his best friend was really not a good friend. He was working in with the Italians, so he was in the Italian infantry as an American, and he was a medic, and his friend loved him, but they had this weird relationship, and I blame the friendship for everything that had gone wrong anyway. It started off rocky. They were on break from they were coming back from the front lines, and they were like, "Hey, let's go out, let's get drunk, let's after we're drunk, we're gonna go meet the nurses." And he says, "You can mess with any of the nurses you want, except for this one." Well, what does he do? He messes with the one,
Of
and
course.
yeah, and she. It's such a weird thing because, especially in today's world, you look at like what that the way it was acted, and what it would be seen like today, but. He went out with her, and his friend, like, he kind of dissed his friend. Like, he came back with the liquor, and they just took off. And he's like, "Oh, what the hell? You're an asshole." But he was there, and he kind of like was getting real forward with her, and she was like, "No." And she like hit him in the face, like, bam. And then she says, "I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that." And but he was like coming on to her like aggressively, like. It wasn't a good scene. And then she forgives him, and then they have sex, and she was a virgin. And he sort of fall he does fall in love with her. They fall in love. And then he has to go back to the front lines, and they try to send mail to each other, but they have friends that are not good people. Like the guy that hangs out with them refuses to send the mail. Like he'll return to sender. Because he wants to go out with them, like, and have parties and meet with the nurses and that kind of thing. And he's in love. Like he doesn't want to go out at all. So she never gets the letters. He never gets the letters. So he's like, something's wrong. So what does he do? He goes AWOL. And then there's like a 20-minute montage of him walking from wherever he is on the front lines to try to get back to her. And she left for, I think it was Switzerland, because she was pregnant. And that was frowned upon at the time, which that I could see that, unmarried sex and you're not allowed to marry anyway. I don't know why that was. I'm gonna have to look that up, especially at Italian, like why you couldn't get married. But anyway, they try getting back to her. By the time he gets to her, she finds her letters were all returned to sender. They never got back. And those were legitimate ones because they got to the lines and he wasn't there because he was AWOL. So they sent the mail back. And then she thought he was dead. Like, I'm dead. And she's pregnant and she passes out. And I guess she gets medic. The baby dies. And then he finds her and she's in the hospital and then she dies. So it's like one of those weird romance stories, war stories that they finally get back together and then she dies. It kind of sucks. It's not a happy ending. And then at the end, they have this really cool geek guy that knows film, right? And he discusses it at the end of the movie. He's like a real intelligent person about film. And he's like, yeah, this was released by Paramount. And the version you just saw was the one that was released overseas, which is true to the book. It didn't have a happy ending. It ended like this. But when it was released in America, she lived. So that was kind of interesting. And the studio Warner Brothers took over it after a while. And then he was talking about how it became public domain after a while. And it had so many versions of it online. You couldn't tell what was real or what wasn't. But they had got the original film for this. Yeah, it was pretty fascinating. And then Gary Cooper and Ernest Hemingway had a relationship, but as long as he didn't mention the movie, because Ernest Hemingway hated the movie. Because he had that one in For Whom the Bell Tolls. And this one he hated because they made it too romantic, and he said like it wasn't true to the book. And he was upset with it. So they had like this friendship, but he could never mention the movie around him because he would get spun up. But it makes you interested. Like, I wonder how much like Ernest Hemingway made at the time to sell his property to make a film, Like people nowadays make millions. I wonder what they if they even cut him a check or if it was like, yeah, we want to adapt your movie. Okay, go ahead and do it. It's strange.
Yeah, I guess I'd assume they still made something, but I'm not sure if it was equivalent. Although, like, I think some writers made a decent living in Hollywood
Oh, I'm
back
sure they
then.
did.
They would, certain authors and spend a lot of time working with Hollywood and stuff. Some others more than others, but yeah, he's definitely not the first or the last author to be upset with the movie adaptation.
Yeah. Didn't me and you cover Taxi Driver in this show? I can't remember. Yeah, I saw the Joker yesterday and I was blown away, man. There's comic book movies and then there's the Joker. And like it had this vibe of Taxi Driver that it was incredible. His performance is like every gesture, every movement he makes like is like cinematic perfection. Like I don't know, it's just there's so many facial movements, there's so many like just the arms and the shoulders moving, the lankiness. It's just God, I just adored it. It's been a long time since I've had like a movie strike all my emotions, like fear, anger, I cried during a scene, you know. I felt sympathetic. I was scared. I mean, it had everything. I had chills because I had some scenes. I mean, it was just, man, I loved it. I mean, there's two movies I loved this year. That one and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I guess it would tell you there's a certain, I don't know, like emotion that both of those movies had in it. Or they're similar in tone.
Yeah.
But I don't know, they just struck me as brilliant. But it reminded me a lot of this older movie because I don't know who this director was. I guess he did some comedies before. But what amazed me is that he wrote the screenplay too.
He
And
did the Hangover movies.
Hangover 2, yeah,
Yeah.
Hangover 1, which I enjoyed, but man, this was just like so much. It's artsy. I mean, it really is, but
Right.
the mannerisms are just, I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, I know that it's yeah, it was heavily influenced by like 70s movies,
It
like
has that vibe totally. That's
yeah.
why I mentioned Taxi Driver, because all I could think about when we watched Taxi, and I watched Taxi Driver way late in life. Like
Right.
it was that first time I watched this when me and you talked about it.
Right.
But it had that vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the closest movie I could ever think about, but it had that strangeness, that darkness about it. And the sickness, I don't know, it was incredible film. I you should see it. I don't know if you like the darkness about it, but you did like Taxi Drivers, so.
Yeah, that's kind of my favorite era of cinema too, is the 70s and
It even looks like the film looks like tinted like 70s. Do you know,
yeah.
it has like a 70s tint. I don't know how they do it or
Right.
how you describe it, but it's like something that Tarantino would do, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made it look like it's from that era and stuff, and it takes place in that time period too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely want to see it. I don't know if I'll go to the theater to see it. Well, I hardly ever go to the theater, but I definitely want to watch it eventually.
Yeah. I love the theater. I don't know what it is, but I think it's the fact that it's just me and the movie. I'm not distracted by anything.
See, that's like the well, you guys go to matinees a lot, so maybe that helps
Every
with that, but like
week, yeah, every
yeah.
week. It's the morning. It's the morning feature. We go to the. It's either the 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock movie. And I think that helps because the crowd for that is much different than if you go at 7 p.m.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 'cause that's what I was gonna say. I don't know if we have any theaters around here that do one that early, 'cause that's my problem, is that for me, it's the opposite of what you just said, is that I tend to find it very distracting to,
Yeah.
I don't want to pay good money and then have to deal with like other people ruining the experience for me. So I just rather watch it at home. We go sometimes, but a lot of times when we go, we tend not to see we tend to see like lower budget or like indie movies if we do go, and those crowds tend to usually be pretty good, but I'm definitely not one for like a packed theater for like a big blockbuster or something
Yeah.
usually. So, but I would like to see that
Have you ever
some
seen
point.
Farewell to Arms or Ernest Hemingway movies?
No, I mean, I've read one or two. I think I read one or two Hemingway books years ago, but I haven't read that one or seen the movie. But I've known of it for a long time. We've known
Yeah.
of, but yeah, that's cool that you're doing that though. I've had periods of time in my life where I've watched a lot of older films. It's been a while, but I definitely like the idea of making an effort to not always just pick the, stuff that came out recently and see some older stuff and
It's a different mindset, but when I put it in, it seems to have like, I don't know, I'm pretty good even in comics about shifting my mind to the time that I'm reading something or watching something. So, like, I don't put it up to today's standards. I watch it for what it is. And at that time, it was groundbreaking, a lot of it, you know? So,
Yeah, that's cool.
I find romance so different in every decade, and that's why I like to read romance comics and stuff, but this was sort of unusual the way they met.
Yeah,
But I
'cause you
guess in
got
times of war, it's strange. But she was the nurse when he came back, and she helped him come back to speed. Like, he was hurt in the leg. I don't know exactly what happened. A bomb hit the tent that they're in, and his friend comes in and says, "Were you doing heroic things? Were you saving lives?" And he goes, "No, I was eating cheese." And he was. For some reason, they were in the tent, and he was with a bunch of Italians, and he would say speaking Italian. And they were eating pasta without like sauce, and they were just slicing cheese and putting it on the pasta. And then all of a sudden, these bombs just started hitting, and really bad effects. But it sort of was destroyed the building they were in, and then he was rushed to the hospital. And then his friend acted like a true friend because he says, "I'm going to ship you to Milan," and he knew the girl was there. But then later on, I blame his friend for the heartbreak because he was stopping the letters, you know? And she became emotionally distraught. And almost like she got sick from heartbreak, you know? Which has happened in a lot of books before.
Yeah, I'll have to remember that as a option for the podcast, maybe watch an older movie instead once in a while, but
Yeah, I thought I would change it up a little bit. And plus I want to do this for me. I want to watch older films. And I've been watching like old serials, but I've been buying those DVDs, like old Phantom, you know, old Black Hawk, the old serials that would play before movies.
Yeah, that's going way back. Was I gonna say? Plus, you can dig into some womance for your 4W. Is that something you came up with, or is that what people call it, the 4Ws?
I came up with it because it's like Elmer Fudd saying all of the properties, right? Womance. War.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I like that.
Plus, it's like a genre that I really want to tap into. And I have a lot of it. And it gives me, like, even one of the guys that I recruited for it, that I know him pretty well because they're Kirk and Joe. They talk a lot of war comics. So, and Joe posts, like, he posts, Joe Crawford posts a lot of variety of stuff. Like, he reads a lot of different stuff.
Yeah, he
So,
does.
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. And then it gives you the flexibility to Matt, those DC horror books are good. I've been reading some of them, and I'm flabbergasted by how good they are because they're only like 8 pages. They're 8-page stories, and it has like three of them. And they get in and they get out fast, but they're effective.
Yeah, some of the ones I've read have been pretty neat, how they're not gory or anything, but they manage to be really entertaining,
Yeah.
and sometimes have really like do horror in a way that's like was acceptable to the comics code, but still definitely horror.
And they've been loading a lot on the app too. I think just last week, like there was like five House of Mysteries that showed up.
Yeah, I think I've been starting to pay attention to that, to like what's being added each week, and I have noticed that they've been adding some of that stuff. It's pretty cool. But yeah, I can see the association of war, Western, romance, and what's the last one?
Yeah, war.
War, because those are were all those are all genres that were used to be a lot more popular, and DC used to invest in a lot more. So, like, the association makes sense. That's a
Yeah,
pretty
because
fun way to.
they were a fundamental comic in the Bronze Age. Silver Age too, but Bronze Age, it seems like where I started to pay attention to it more.
Yeah, definitely. Well, speaking of DC, but not speaking of the 4 Ws, since this will be
Whooper
Whooper
Heroes.
Heroes. I read some just after some more just after Crisis stuff, and I read the first one I read was Wattman. I'll stop doing that. 409. This is just after Jason Todd's introduction, or well, post-crisis introduction. It's by Max Allan Collins with art by Ross Andrew and Dick Giordano, and it's called Just Another Kid on Crime Alley. And so in the previous issue is when Jason Todd had famously tried to steal the wheels off of the Batmobile, and all that. And he had taken Jason to Ma Gunn, her school for boys, thinking that buying into the falsity that she was putting out there, with that she was putting this, she had the school for boys to help wayward youth on their way back to being productive members of society. And of course, that's not really what's going on behind the scenes. She's using it as a front to train these kids to be better criminals. So just the opposite, really, and to make money for her to run her own little gang and stuff. So as Batman's driving off, thinking that he's done Jason some good, Ma is telling the other boys she's got there to, as she says it, she asks them, "Who wants to snuff the little stoolie for old Ma?" But she finds out, there's more to Jason Todd than it appears when all the boys try to beat him up, and he starts fending off a lot of them. So he shows he's got some promise. So she says that he can get his own bed at the place, basically. Meanwhile, Bruce Wayne, he kind of tries to do a little research on Jason's background, I'm not sure exactly where he's at, but he's getting some information on Jason's mother, who appears to have died from an overdose recently, and he runs into Vicky Vale when he's there, and they have a little conversation where she's kind of pumping him a little bit for information on what he's doing there and doing around. She's doing some reports on Crime Alley and wants to get some information from him about what he's doing there as a philanthropist and stuff. It's kind of also serves as a segue to the fact that they're doing like a human interest story on Magan's school. So they come in there with the camera and stuff, and Bruce accompanies Vicky Vale there. Magan puts up the whole facade and everything like that. As soon as they leave, she switches over the instruction that she's doing, and it's all this. She's giving them all this information on different weaponry and asking them the advantages over an automatic weapon versus a revolver and all this stuff. But one of the kids is smoking. She says, "Freddie, is that weed you're smoking?" He just answers, "Yes, ma'am." And so she pulls it out of his mouth. She pulls a joint out of his mouth and knocks him across the head, and says, "Stick with booze, boys. It's good enough for my sons, rest their souls, and it's good enough for you." And she's got a bottle of something, and the one kid's like trying to take it from her. She's like, "No, not today," because she needs their she needs them to have clear heads, because she's got a plan. When they're going to go on a tour of the art museum, she's got some kind of plan going on there.
That was Ma Gunn, right?
Yeah.
That did that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that she reward him with liquor, because that's just a story in the recent news that there was a mom rewarding her kids with liquor who was in trial. It's like Ma Gunn.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's some good mothering there. So Jason, to his credit, he's thinking to himself, this old dame is baddie. I don't know if there was any pun intended there, but he decides to sneak out that night, just as Batman is making a visit to Commissioner Gordon, and it seems that he had requested some information that Gordon got together, and where he finds out that Jason Todd's father, Willis Todd, was a small-time crook that grew up in Crime Alley, and sort of worked his way up to booths and cars, and as far as they know, he's dead. He's supposedly double-crossed Two-Face, his boss at the time. So Batman's continuing to do his kind of research into Jason's background. And then later that night, Batman breaks up basically some college kids come to Crime Alley, and they're looking to score drugs, and the people that they're trying to buy drugs from kind of get the jump on them. It's sort of a setup. They start attacking them, and they're going to take everything that they have instead of just what they're bringing to buy drugs and stuff. And Batman breaks it up, and he gives the college kids back their money and says, "Get the hell out of here," basically. But the sort of the relevance to the story is that he, I guess, is to show like one of the punks actually gets a hit on him from behind, hits him across the back of the head with something, And he has no problem taking care of the guy afterwards, but as he's walking away, he's thinking, "Man, I must be getting old." But then he also ponders the fact that, he had gotten so used to depending on Robin watching his flank that he's not used to having he's not used to being solo. So it's kind of like it's obviously there to sort of set up the idea that he's missing something by not having Robin with him. So then Batman catches up with Jason Todd. He's like kind of looks like he's like hanging out in some sewers or something like that. I don't know, like some hideout spot where he's like reading something and listening to music. And Batman sneaks up on him and pulls the headphones off and says, "You didn't keep your end of the bargain," because he is supposed to stay with my gun. And Jason says, "Like hell." Batman says, "Watch your mouth." So he's like, why aren't you at my guns?" And Jason tells him, "Yeah, great school you enrolled me in. It's a kindergarten for crime." And Batman's like, "What sort of nonsense?" And Jason says, "I don't want to learn to be a crook. I was just doing what I needed to survive." And Batman's still not totally believing him, but he gets so the whole reason that he knew maybe something was going on is that when he's near Ma Gun School, he finds a guy who's standing outside of his car, staring at where his car tire used to be, his tires used to be. He's like, so somebody stole his tires. And so Batman thinks, is likely thinking, I know somebody that's prone to taking tires. And that's when he goes and he looks and finds Jason and finds out, and he gets Jason to put the tires back on the guy's car. So finally, we get to the heist that Ma Gun is planning for at the art museum, and apparently she's got a job from the Joker, actually. That wants these jewels for whatever reason. So I guess they're ones that he tried to steal himself.
Does it
So of
actually
course,
show the Joker in it, or is it just like just mentioned?
so one of the boys says, "Ain't them the rocks the Joker tries to hide?" And one of my gun's quirks is that she's always correcting their grammar. So she does that, and then she says, and he's our buyer." And one of the others says, "But Joker's submitted to Arkham." She says, "He's committed to the asylum, dear, but his money and his minions aren't. Now we must work quickly." But so it just shows, like, as she's talking, it like shows like just a little inset panel of Joker's smile and with the jewels around his neck.
A floating
But that's
head.
it.
No.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, but just a little box like within the box of her talking. Just kind of. But Batman breaks this up, and it ends with him turning around at Ma Gun standing there after she kind of like hits him in the shoulder from behind with her purse, whap, and he says, "Hey," and he turns around and she says, "You wouldn't hit a lady," and he says, "Never," and then it's like Biff, and he just like taps her on the chin with his fist and she falls over. He says, "I guess class is dismissed." But yeah, if there's still another guy, he throws like some weird art object on top of him and stuff. But Jason shows up and he says to the last guy, "You want a hand getting down from there?" But the kid comes up to him and Jason kicks the gun out of his hand and then knocks him out. And basically, it ends with Jason, helped him out. So him and Batman and Jason are leaving, and they go outside, and Batman to the Batmobile. Batman says, "I see my wheels are intact," and then he invites Jason to take a ride with him in the Batmobile. And he said, and Jason says, "If you turn me over to the social workers, well, the chances of a kid my age finding a decent home are slim." And he says, Batman says, "Don't bet on it, Robin." And
Ah,
he
there you
says,
go.
"Robin?" And Robin. And then they drive, and Batman's actually smiling. So so the next issue has Jason in the Robin costume on the cover, being with Two-Face holding a gun to his head. But yeah, so it was interesting. I mean, it kind of made me think about the whole, we might have talked about this before, but just the whole phenomenon of Robin, because like one of the things I kind of, I have trouble with Jason Todd is just I always have kind of a trouble with his fate, because I have trouble with violence against kids,
Miners, yeah.
against minors. So that's a kind of a tough story for me. And it's interesting because I feel like now it's almost like DC has found a way to have a Robin still, but avoid the problem. Because with Damian, it wasn't Batman that trained him,
Yeah.
initially. Like when Batman became aware of his existence, he was already trained, or at least, and so it kind of takes it out of Batman's hands. Like he's not the one that's deciding to put a minor in this line of work, basically. It's already been decided for him, so the best he can do is just is give his own guidance to Damian and stuff. Because otherwise, like I think nowadays it'd be harder to, back when they introduced the original Robin, Dick Grayson and stuff, they like the whole idea, things were more innocent, and the whole idea was, oh, like you could put yourself in his shoes and wouldn't be awesome to be Batman's partner and stuff like that. And but
True,
nowadays,
true, true, but I mean, if you go back, it was pretty violent. Like he was putting him in danger because during that time they were fighting people with guns. Like a lot of the crime people had weapons.
yeah,
So
that's true.
he was in danger of getting shot every time he went out.
Yeah, that's true.
It's weird because I mean, they've killed every Robin. They've killed Tim Drake, they've killed Jason Todd, they've killed Damian. I don't think they've killed Dick Grayson. They've done other things to him. He was believed to be dead, and that's why he became a agent of Spiral. But I can't think of when they killed Dick.
Yeah, and didn't he technically die briefly? Like his heart stopped and then was restarted or something when that
In Final
whole
Crisis,
spiral thing? Yeah.
yeah, right before. So he did sort of die, but he didn't.
There wasn't a period of time where it
And then
was.
Batman knew that he wasn't dead. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like he knew the whole
Yeah.
time that he was undercover.
Right.
But I mean, there might be another time. I mean, he was just recently shot in the head, so he doesn't even know who he is. But they've done a lot of things to the sidekicks.
Yeah.
It's interesting because somebody had mentioned this on another podcast that, DC does a lot more with legacy and sidekicks, and it's true because if you go over to the Marvel side, you've got Bucky, you've got Toro, a lot of things from the Golden Age, but then not so much.
Yeah,
The
there's not
other,
much to work with.
yeah. I mean, you have other flavors of stuff like May Parker and stuff, but they're usually in other worlds.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Or like Ultimate Spider-Man and all the different Spider-Men, they're not really sidekicks. What was that? Man, I can't remember what that Rick Veitch story was back in the 90s about sidekicks. Oh, the Brat Pack. Don't read that. Don't ever read that. That is about sidekicks, and it's really vile. Like, if you don't like to see kids getting violated. But that's what he did. He did a takeoff of all of the kids. Like, why the hell are they getting put in danger? What is this weird situation? And
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends, 'cause if it's ultimately like critical of that idea, then. But yeah, I mean it's weird, 'cause I mean I love the new Teen Titans and stuff, but they're like at by that point they were like in their late 20s, or not late 20s, but like late teens, early 20s,
yeah, I would say teens, but still, I mean, that's, you think of every character, like Superman. Well, he had Superboy, but that Superboy thing was kind of weird. But then you have Batman, and he has Robin, and Aquaman had Aqualad, and you had Wonder Girl for Wonder Woman. All of them had sidekicks. Green Lantern didn't. And Flash had Kid Flash, but there was always a sidekick for all the major characters.
Yeah, it's not really so much as like having the sidekicks be in peril or anything like that. It's just, I think, the just straight up having them be killed, especially with Robin, it was kind of something they ended up a well they went to too often, in the nature of the with in the case of Jason Todd, that was almost like turned into a publicity event, with the whole phone number thing and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they voted to kill him. That shows you what society was like. Let's kill him. I voted to keep him alive,
Oh, you did
because be,
vote.
I did vote. I called the number and I voted to keep him alive because I liked him, because he came from like an Oliver Twist type situation, and I just want. I love the character. Like, one of my favorite issues is when he pushes that fat guy off the building and it's like diplomatic immunity. He was hiding behind diplomatic immunity. And you don't know, like, it doesn't say he did it, but you know he did. And Batman looks out the window and just sees Robin like swinging away. And he knows what he did. He killed that guy. And it's like in Lethal Weapon, like Lethal Weapon, where the guy was hiding behind diplomatic immunity, committing all this crime, and Jason couldn't take it, and I can see that happening with the sidekick. Like, he's teaching him not to kill, but then you see these situations, and it'll always cross your mind, well, if I don't, he's gonna get out and kill another 1,000 people, like the Joker. And it's just repetitive. So it's like, where's my guilt? Yeah, I'm calm because I've never committed the crime, but I've had the chance to stop this man, and yet he keeps coming back and killing thousands. And I would feel more guilt for that personally, because he's out there killing more people, and it's a repetitive cycle. So I could see a sidekick just like Jason, just this cycle has to end.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, even though he was killed, of course, he came back, and now it's kind of like ultimately they put him back in that same role of being excuse me, the student that decided not to fully follow the teacher's advice,
Well, you
I
can
like.
see Ma Gunn in Red Hood and the Outlaws. She comes back.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
I don't think I if I ever read those. I know I read a few of the early issues when it was the New 52, but.
There's like three cycles of Jason Todd in the series. And some of them are meant to be, I think, more light-hearted. There's Red Hood and the Outlaws when you had the three of them, and then there's Red Hood and Arsenal, where it was like a buddy cop show. And then there's the in the Rebirth, there was just Red Hood and the Outlaws, and in that one, he started to take a more serious take, like going back to the roots with Ma Gunn and all kinds of stuff. 'Cause that series was launched like 3 times.
Yeah, 'cause that was that the was that last one the one where it was Artemis and Bizarro?
Yeah. And it's pretty, I mean, when you think about it, it's like taking the Holy Trinity and like flipping the script.
Yeah, that was, I
It's
guess, the concept.
the concept, and the thing that's amazing about that series, and you'll hear people talk about it, is it really grows on you. Like, especially Bizarro. Bizarro reminds me of Lenny and of Mice and Men. He's loyal, but he doesn't always aware of what he's doing, It's like the Defenders. Like, you're putting this atomic bomb on the team, the Hulk, and you can't control him. I mean, you hope you can, but you throw him out there, you don't know what's gonna happen. But yeah, that's I think you'd like the new take. I mean, it kind of gets really weird around the time that Dick Grayson gets shot and this Leviathan thing, but before that, it was I think it was sort of true to the roots of the character. Same
Yeah,
writer for all of them too. Scott Lobdell did a lot of it. Yeah.
I kind of like him as the like when they when the Bat family ends up getting together, things are serious enough that they need him to be involved too, and how he's kind of like you have him and Tim and Dick, and he's the one that's just like they know him and they associate with him, but he's the one that like kind of went through the same system as they did. Like they all graduated from the same school, but he was the one that like decided to kind of go his own path and not follow all the rules.
Yeah, he's like Damien, sort of. They're very similar. Not in
Definitely have.
wit. Like, Damien's well more trained. He's like a weapon of mass destruction. I mean, and just spoiled rotten. But the fact that they're more defiant than like Tim, or Dick. They're more lo Tim and Dick are more loyal and more they think things out, and those two are more act on instinct kind of Robins,
Yeah, they're definitely similar in that respect. Different backgrounds, different like upbringing and stuff, but yeah, similar in that
Yeah.
respect.
Well, my next book is I Love You from Charlton Comic Books. And this thing ran from 1955 to 1980, so some of these romance comics lasted a long time. Not only that, it kind of gives you perspective on how long Charlton existed. And Charlton's interesting in itself because the two guys met in prison and wanted to do comics and bought a printing press and made their own company. And because their printer was older, you'll see like a different quality in the Charlton books. Like, you can tell a Charlton book. A matter of fact, I don't know what kind of paper they used. And you know how I sniff comics, but Charlton has a really good smell to it. Like, I could tell Charlton comics from DC or Marvel. Like, it has a different distinctive smell, but it is a really nice smell. And I bought this comic from Aaron Myers, who recently got a like some pristine collection of Charlton. Like, if they were red, they were red like once, so the condition is like immaculate, which is kind of hard to find in a Charlton comic. This title spawned from a title called In Love. It's kind of like DC when they switched title names and then it just continues with something else. It became I Love You, and it was their long-running romance comic. With I like DC's romance better because they almost have like a I don't know, like, I what do they call the Tales from the Crypt formula, or
Anthology?
Not an anthology, but it's the formula where it has that twist at the end.
Oh, like a O. Henry.
Yeah, thank you. That was the term I was looking. A lot of theirs end like O. Henry or like an unexpected ending or something, and that's why I like the DC ones. Whereas this one, these ones are pretty straightforward, and there's no letters pages, and the letters pages like I love. I don't know who the creators are. I can tell you it's from 1979. There's no one credited. The first story is drawn beautifully. I mean, it's really nice artwork. It's sort of, I don't know if they're where they're from, but it takes place in like somewhere like Italy. And this local falls in love with the girl, and the girl thinks, well, you only love me because my father's rich. Because the father became rich in the Americas and then came back, and he's well thought of in his foreign town because he donates to the whole city. He does a lot for the city where he came from. And she thinks, well, this guy is just all over me because of my father. But he turns out he wants nothing, like he doesn't even care about the money. And that's sort of how it ends. And then the father's like, he ain't gonna get any of my money anyway, so he doesn't care. But that's how it ends. He ends up with the girl and doesn't really care about the money, which is interesting. The second story is called One Kiss is Deadly, and it's about this blonde guy who all the girls are attracted to. Like he just like will manipulate every girl that he gets, and he gets this one redheaded girl, and he's sort of leading her on, but she says, I ain't gonna have any of this, and she sort of leads him on the bridge before she falls into his trance. And it's weird because this guy with black hair, I can't even remember his name, but he always benefits all the girls that he dumps, he gets. So it's like, I don't know what kind of story that is, but he seems to be the guy where the girls go to to cry on their shoulder and say, oh, I hate this guy, but he ends up scoring with all the women. So I don't understand what that's about. The next one's A Message from Home. This is about a this is like this the movie I just talked about. It's Farewell to Arms in romance style. In the Vietnam War, he meets you know how they would, what do they call it when those women would go out, entertainers would go out to all of the USO Entertainment Group. She was part of the USO Entertainment Group, and she was an entertainer. Like she would sing in front of all of the different military parades, and this guy sort of fell in love with her, and later on he's injured, and they end up seeing each other. It almost felt like it was Farewell to Arms, like in like an 8-page story, except it had a happy ending. In Farewell to Arms, she died, the baby died, and he was stuck by himself. Then it's got Poster Riot. Who does it have? Linda Ronstadt, Fleetwood Mac, Kiss. I can't even see who these people are. Or Boston and the Bay City Rollers. You could order your poster.
Oh,
23 by
I remember
35
those.
inch. Yeah, for 250.
The ads, all the different posters you can buy.
Yeah. The next one's called Lovely but Unloved. And this was the best story. This was the best drawn and the best, I think, story of it was the last story. And it's about this model agent, and he gets all these girls, and he finds this teenager, and this teenager is very young. I think she's like 15, 16, and he gets her to be a model for these car ads, and she becomes really popular, and she falls in love with him. But the agent is like, well, you're underage. I can't have this happen. So the way it ends is they end up kissing, but he's like, I'll be waiting for you when you turn 18. It's kind of cool. He held back.
Yeah. Jeez. That's funny.
Yeah. So that was I Love You from 1979.
How many issues did you say that went for?
It went to 1980, lasted 130 issues.
Nice.
So this is towards the tail end of it leaving, because this was 124 and it ended in 130. I was on the way out.
Yeah. Well, that kind of makes sense, the timing. 79.
I have seen like independent publishers toy around with romance comics, and I really like it. I wish they would make a comeback. Like the areas that I find romance comics are sometimes like from a Wave Blue World and Kickstarters. But yeah, this one's really good. I don't know why I like them. They're very timely too. Like this time period, 1979, they used a lot of the word chick. Like, hey, chick.
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of gives you like a glimpse into that time period in a way that it's going to bring up aspects of that time that you're not going to see in other genres,
Yeah.
possibly, you know, like if, yeah, it gives you a little, they're amusing because it's, they're anachronistic, like they don't read like something would today. Well,
Yeah, there was one that I picked up at, I think it was San Diego Comic-Con from Tom Beland, and it was called Postcards, and it was an amazing anthology. It was sort of like love stories, but it was the publisher, what they did is they found a box of old postcards that were just like various like postcards from one person to another, like from the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And they handed out a postcard to every writer and said, "Can you write a story on this?" And it was just an amazing little anthology. And then they would show the actual postcard, you know, that it came from, and how the writer actually tweaked it or wrote stuff around just the paragraph or two that's on the back of the postcard. It was pretty amazing.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Different concept. You said that was just an indie thing you picked up?
Yeah, it was a hardcover. It was I don't even remember who put it out. It was like a book publisher, but I don't remember who it was. Del Rey or something like that.
Did you say San Diego Comic-Con?
Yeah.
When was the last time you have you gone to that more than once or just
We
one
went there
time?
2 years in a row. I think it was 2006 and 2007, somewhere around
Okay.
that time frame. Right before it got to the point where you have to be in a online waiting room for 2 hours before you can get a ticket. Back then, I could get on and get off and order a ticket.
Yeah, hadn't quite blown up.
Yeah. It was big though. I mean, it was very like Hall H was still like, here's Angelina Jolie and Halle Berry. I think we saw Angelina Jolie. We saw one of the two. We missed Halle Berry because the stupid people opened the door on the wrong end. So we were like towards the front of the line, and then they opened the door on the other side. It was one of those stupid, they like did things wrong, the people that were lining up.
That must have been pretty exciting for the people at the back of the
Yeah.
line.
And they aren't like the type of people that say, "No, they were here first." They just ran in
No.
and took their spots.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's more people that will do that than there are people that'll.
I don't think you would like it at all. Like, I think it's like too overwhelming. Like it is like you could almost similar to like a mosh pit almost. Like when you're in the main floor on Saturday, it's just like, oh my God. And then even like around there, because the place is amazing. Like San Diego's got like all kinds of crazy things to see. And it's just if you're within a mile radius, it's just packed.
Yeah, we went to San Diego 2 years ago, and I loved San Diego, but I don't have any interest in going to San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, I'd go back if I had the opportunity, but I'm not one of those people to like sit and wait in a waiting room and see if I can get a ticket. Maybe if I was retired and I had nothing else to do.
No, I mean, that's just an additional barrier to entry to me. It's like, not only is it extremely crowded, but I have to do that to try to get a ticket and stuff. Like, no thanks. Because in the first place, I don't know if I'd even want to be there in those crowds. I mean, same thing. Like, I see the pictures of New York Comic Con at this point. It's like
Yeah.
a bit
That's
much.
what Heroes is amazing. You have space. It's not really packed. Baltimore gets packed on Saturday, you saw. But like the other days they're pretty, you could still walk around and get around pretty easy. Heroes
And
is amazing. I like Heroes a lot.
if it's only for a period of time, like for just one day, or and the whole region isn't that way, then
Yeah.
around the con is then it's bearable.
And you see how nonchalant we are when we hang out, 'cause we'll be at the restaurant for 2 hours and then go to the con, spend some time, and then go away from the con, and it's not you're not at the con the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a break. I don't know. I mean, to each their own. I mean, people that show up with like a stack of comics and a list of their priorities to get everything signed by everybody under the sun, and they're, following an agenda the entire time. If that's what's fun for them, then so be it. But,
I'm the opposite of that. I don't take anything with me. I just go to meet my friends and hang out.
So, speaking of friends, I read The Legion of Superheroes. I don't know if that really makes sense as a
Are you
segue,
friends with
but
them?
no, but well, I wouldn't mind being,
Did you hang
but
out with them?
I would like to. Maybe not all of them, but
Well, who's your favorite? Give
oh
me give, give
man.
me give me your give me your top three Legionnaires.
Oh, geez, that's tough. One of the things I like about the Legion is that there's a lot of different characters, but which I know is something that turns people off. But I feel like I wonder what I said when we, because I'm pretty sure that we've
We did
done
our
the.
top five, yeah.
I wonder what I said. I'd have to go
I
back
know
and.
two of them right offhand. One of mine is Ultra Boy. I love his turn on one, get rid of the others abilities, and I love that he's sort of the temperamental one. Like he won't think straight all the time. And then I love Night Girl. I don't know why, 'cause she's not in it. She's more of a Legion of Substitute or a teacher or there's just something I like about her. Every time she appears, she's pretty obscure.
Yeah, I like I think Phantom Girl. I probably said that the other time too. I like her. And Shadowless, I think is pretty cool. Yeah, I tend to like the I tend to gravitate more towards the Silver Age characters. So I like them, and
I like Wildfire a lot just because he's just this ball of energy
he is
in a
interesting.
suit. Yeah.
He
I
is
feel bad
interesting.
for him, but it has like that human bomb factor, and I love the human bomb from the Freedom Fighters.
Yeah, and I
Plus,
guess then
he's
maybe.
iconic. All of the heroes I like, I'm attracted to their suits too. Like, their character design is amazing.
Yeah, maybe Shrinking Violet or triplicate girl.
Yeah, do you remember they had like the espionage group? And Shrinking Violet and Triplicate Girl were in that group. They had the
Yeah,
ones
they.
that would go undercover and do spy things, which made sense because you got a girl that could get really, really small and a girl that can replicate herself.
Yeah, they're good choices for.
Yeah.
But yeah, this issue 36 from like the Baxter run is it's a like a I've always liked these kind of issues. It's sort of an in-between issue.
Which issue
A
was this? 36?
36, yeah, kind of like a wrap-up issue. This is Paul
Hmm.
Levitz, of course, and Greg Larocque. It's the cover says "The Votes Are In, Special Election Issue," and it's got Polar Boy, Dawnstar, Electric or Element Lad, Timberwolf, and what's her face? Now why am I drawing a blank?
Describe. No.
It's Censor Girl. Censor Girl.
Oh, yeah, the one that had a face mask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had like the
Didn't
secret
she turn
identity
out to
for a
be
while.
Kryptonian or no? I can't remember. I thought she did.
She, because there was the whole like who is
The Censor
Censor
Girl,
Girl
yeah.
thing. Not that long before this. Wasn't she, people thought that she was Supergirl for a while.
Yeah, that's why I thought she's Kryptonian. I don't know what
But
she turned out to be. What did she turn out to be? Do you remember?
I'm trying to remember because I picked up reading these like after that happened.
Yeah.
A few issues after that happened. She's still around, so I gotta look her up now. But yeah,
I
she's
just
kind of.
completed the Baxter run. I just completed it like 2 weeks ago. So now I have a
Yeah,
full run of the
there's.
Baxter run, and I'm working on Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes before it becomes Legion of Superheroes.
Censor Girl. Originally was Jim Shooter, was a Jim Shooter creation. Originally, Princess Projectra.
That's who she turned out to be?
Well, let's see. I think so. This is one of those podcast moments where
Yeah.
the listener has like a.
The answer right there. You idiots.
Yeah, because she was reintroduced. Yeah, it's
Yeah,
Censor
as soon
Girl's
as
true identity was unknown to other characters in the story. Steve Lytle, who created Censor Girl's costume, had no idea the character was supposed to be Princess Projectra and believed her to be Supergirl.
Ah.
And it is believed Levitz came up with the idea that Censor Girl was Projectra significantly far into the development process of the story.
Yeah, I just googled Censor Girl and Princess Projector came
Yeah,
up.
yeah. It's like conflated into the same Wikipedia entry and
Yeah.
stuff. So anyway, she's on the cover of this. But what this story takes place, it's just after the Universo Project storyline. And it really kind of the beginning moment is and the sort of thing that ties the issue together is that Element excuse me, Element Lad, even though his term as leader is almost over, he is resigning early. And he wants to institute a vote for his replacement. And so he's making this announcement, and all the current Legionnaires, there's like over 20 of them, are sitting at the table. Yeah, Polar Boy, who's who was a substitute hero and only recently got in to be a regular legionnaire, he eagerly, almost immediately, tells everybody he's running for leader.
He gets it eventually too.
He at the end in this issue, yeah.
Yeah.
spoilers.
I just remember reading that and I was like, wow, you know.
yeah. So that's kind of the reaction of a lot of the legionnaires, but obviously enough vote for him, but Phantom Girl says that take a breath. It's against tradition to act too eager, but they open up the polls and to election, and then most of the issue is kind of, I mean, one thing I think Levitz is good. I mean, he also has like 27 pages to work with, but he's good at like, here's a few pages with these members, here's a few pages with these members. Like, you know, he keeps jumping around and he gives a lot of the characters the screen time. He's like pretty good at dealing with a large cast of characters. And so we have a lot of different scenes with different legionnaires. Sensor Girl and Tellus, who's also like kind of a new member. He's the more alien looking.
I liked him. He was yellow and purplish.
Yeah, yellow and purple. And yeah. One of the things that Levitz did do in this period is tried to introduce characters that weren't just your like typical like human shaped legionnaire. And Tellus is obviously one of those. And the two of them and Saturn Girl are actually responsible for transporting Universo himself into prison. Like they're basically putting him to sleep in suspended animation in a baffle chamber. But she briefly goes into his mind to discern more of his intentions, why he had, so he had imprisoned a large majority of the legionnaires in the previous story, and why, what, so she goes in to find out what he wanted, why he did that, and she finds out that he wanted to use them as a superpowered strike force to attack Oa. So she doesn't spend too much time in there. She's like, she compares being in his mind to being in an intricate sewer. And that it would be difficult to, even if she spent weeks in his mind, which she doesn't want to do, to find out the full truth. But Tellus comes in and says he heard mentioning Oa. Why did he need so much power? She tells him that Oa is probably the most dangerous planet in the universe, and she doesn't even know if there is enough power in the galaxy to attack it, but she doesn't really know why Universo wanted to go and attack Oa, and she hopes they don't find out the hard way. Meanwhile, you have Colossal Boy and Timberwolf and Block. They're putting the Legion's multi-lab back together, dealing with the destruction that Universo created, and he created, like, when he attacked there. Magnetic Kid shows up and helps out, and they continue to kind of discuss the election, and Magnetic Kid is also new, so he's kind of disappointed that the election isn't more exciting, that there hasn't been a lot of campaigning for members. And Colossal Boy tells him, yeah, we don't really tend to do a whole lot of that. But then they leave the room, and there's this giant ice construct, like something kind of like Iceman could make, but I don't know if it's supposed to be in a different language or something, because it doesn't make any sense, but they clearly recognize it as something that Polar Boy created as like an election ad and stuff. And someone that's not too happy with this is Lightning Glass, who shatters it with bolt, and there's just ice everywhere, and everyone's kind of shocked. And her brother, Garth, who's not an active Legionnaire at the time, she apologizes and says she got mad, but he said ultimately, that's probably the right thing to do. Like, that's not really like the Legion style to do that kind of thing. And they just have a little conversation about, like, right now, Garth, he's staying at home, with him and Saturn Girl have kids now, and he's the one that's staying at home, seeing to the children and stuff while she's more active Legionnaire. And so then we check in with Brainiac and Ultra Boy and Mon-El. They are dealing with, so Universo had created a bunch of facilities around the world that were putting out hypnotic chemicals, and one of the ones that he did was is in the Himalayas, and they're deconstructing and getting rid of the entire facility. And I thought it was kind of neat, like, you have these kind of in-between issues, but I thought it was cool to kind of see them. You always have these supervillain plots that create all these different bases and stuff around the world, and I thought it was kind of cool to see them actually dealing with the aftermath and that and cleaning up the mess, essentially, you know. It's a concept that, Marvel used with Damage. Was it Damage Control or Damage?
Yeah. Damage control.
But so they, Mon-El and Colossal Boy, they, or not Mon-El and Ultra Boy, they are pretty powerful Legionnaires, so they actually lift up the base into the air and then smash it down into a ball, and then the two of them together throw it through a portal in the screen around the Earth, and it's just going to keep going until it gets vaporized by the sun. So
Unless
that's
you
a good way to
consider
compare it.
Mon-El's weakness to lead.
Yeah, I guess
I
there
mean,
wasn't
that's so y huge. I mean,
Yeah.
it's not
I guess
like it's
they
kryptonite, which is not readily available.
Right.
You could throw some lead crayons at him and he'd be like, "Oh my God." The house could be lead paint and he'd be all sick. They didn't think that out too well.
Yeah, well, I guess
I
thankfully, at
guess
least
in
for his
space
sake,
things aren't made out of lead anymore.
yeah, and lead paint's already become uncommon nowadays,
Yeah.
so I guess by the Legionnaires' time, they definitely don't have that around. But yeah, and I guess Universo didn't make his base out of lead either, so. Then we have an interesting scene where Wildfire goes to visit Quizlet, which is a little.
Oh, he's like the little Booster Gold thing. Yeah.
He's talking about like different types of Legionnaires. He's another new one, and his like it's Quizlet's quarters, and it's this weird like there's a door floating in this yellow space, and then just kind of like this triangle with a red energy around it. It's really bizarre. And Wildfire sticks his head in to visit him, and he says, "What the? You've got one hell of a weird place here, Quizlet." But it's kind of interesting. It's like it's definitely not a place for a human. And Quizlet makes a little chair for Wildfire to sit in, and they have this conversation about Wildfire, and they talk about some things, and then he says, I guess because Quizlet, he helped him recently to control his energy outside the containment suit a bit better, and then he says, I just made me wonder if there's anything else you can do. And Quizlet says, "Woo boy, Quizlet, glad you asked." And then, without really asking her or something, like he causes wildfire to come out of his costume. So he's just an energy source, you know. And he tells him to be quiet while he works, and Quizlet actually creates a body. He takes his energy and forms it into a body out of anti-energy. And he says, you know, I'll be able to teach you how to do this all by yourself. So that's pretty interesting. And then on Metropolis, we have Timberwolf. He's like kind of on a date with this Marilla Tau, who's from the Hollow News. She's a reporter. They're kind of on a date type thing. And Polar Boy back at headquarters was trying to get a hold of Timberwolf. You know, he's preoccupied, but they're at the point where they've pretty much all the votes are in except for Polar Boy, but they haven't tallied the votes until because Polar Boy doesn't want all the votes tallied until they're all collected, and Polar Boy is the only one that hasn't voted. So we don't find out yet what's going on. We got another scene where Violet is Violet, Colossal Boy, and Sun Boy are exercising in the gym, actually their computer Computo comes in to tell them that the voting's over. And he actually tells them that Polar Boy won. And so then it kind of switches to like a nine panel, a 3x3 grid. And we just have it just kind of for a couple pages, it just pops around to all the different places we've been before as people react to the new leader. Some of the other ones that are new that have joined recently are excited that one of their, like, group, basically their class, have joined. Most people are excited or fine with it. Dawnstar just says, Polar Boy. So she's at least just kind of surprised. But Lightning laughs. She laughs and says, "You're kidding." And Shadow last admonishes her, tells her to at least give him a chance. And so Polar Boy is really excited and happy, and so it kind of lasts. So then he names Element Lad his deputy. Element Lad hasn't completely gotten out of authority, but it sort of ends with a prelude or a teaser for the next storyline, because Element said, "Well, I'm almost sorry you chose me as a deputy, because we've got some hard choices ahead, some scary ones." And he says, "It seems the 20th century isn't what we thought it was." And they go into a room, and it's Cosmic Boy and Night Girl, who've, you know, they recently had the Cosmic Boy miniseries, and they've recently returned from the 20th century. And then on the last page, we see the Time Institute, which is on campus of Metropolis University. And it has a time beacon that lets time travelers return home. It's always been rebuilt in the past when it's had assaults from various villains and stuff. But as over the panels on the last page, we see it get blasted by some force and destroyed. It ends with a quote from the Time Trapper. "It's finally begun, the grandest game of all. Cosmic Boy will return with all the Legionnaires at his back. Determined Lad, he'll try to save history, his future, his reality. He doesn't dream that time itself is stacked against him. So this is like goes into a story where they deal with the ramifications of crisis, and sort of unravel that whole bit with like how is crisis gonna proceed, or how's the Legion gonna proceed with the way that crisis has changed the history and stuff with Superboy and all that. So should be interesting, but it's funny, he says determined lad, and I'm like, did he is he switching to talking about a different Legionnaire that I don't know about, or is that Cosmic Boy's new identity?
Determined lad.
Determined lad sounds like a downgrade in power, but who knows.
Yeah, but if you're determined, you might succeed every time.
Yeah, so yeah, in that sense maybe it's not.
Yeah. I look forward to digging back into that Baxter run now that I have a full run. It should be fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a good era of comics.
Yeah, that's kind of when I started Legion, to tell you the truth. I didn't really, I might have had like one or two Legion of Superboys, and that was it. And when I started to go to the comic store, the Baxter run was like exclusive to the comic shop. That's kind of when I had gotten like at least 10 or so Legion comics. That's how I really learned about the Legion, is through the Baxter run. So my next book is the unex well, it's called Unexpected, not the Unexpected 123. And I like this because the premise is we're gonna like flip the script and it's gonna be unexpected ending. But it falls more into like it could be horror or it could be suspense or murder or stuff like that. And the first story, it has art by George Tuska, which I've become a fan of. He drew a lot of Werewolf by Night and a lot of Marvel stuff, with a story by Charles Williams, and it's called Death Watch. And this story is about a guy that fears dying of a heart attack, and he's an older guy who has a lot of money, and one of his best friends is sort of trying to lead him into a heart attack, like trying to give him a heart attack. So like he'll put a hood on his head and try to rob him with sunglasses on to give him a heart attack and just lead him into situations where he'll almost die. But when he does do that time, he tries to give him a heart attack and then goes to console his girl, like which is even worse. So he's like trying to kill his friend and take his woman. But as he's in bed, he's in a coma because he like scared him, and he's sort of in the coma and he's watching this guy and he's learning that this guy's the guy behind it. And he comes out of his coma and he's like hugging his wife, or I don't know if it's wife or his girlfriend, and he's like, "I know what you've been doing." So he didn't die, and now the best friend that was trying to kill him is stuck there. He let him go. He didn't call the cops or anything, but still, he's busted. The next story is awesome. It's called The Man in the Attic. The art is by Dylan Giacioa. I don't never heard of him. And then Carl Wessler is the storyteller. And it looks like this woman's like in her late 50s, and she has tenants, and she's got one tenant that's in her 60s, and they're talking about a strangler. Like there's a guy that's strangled like 18 people, and he doesn't like just go after women. He strangles men, he strangles whoever's there. And one night a guy that works nights comes to and says, "Hey, I really need a room. I'll give you the money the next night." And she takes him in, even though the other woman says, "Are you crazy with the strangler? We could have just allowed the strangler to come in." And she's got all her rooms rented out except for the attic. So the attic's available, and she says, "Well, here's a nice cot." And the older woman's like, "You could have rented to the strangler. What are you, crazy?" And she said, "Well, he reminds me of my dead husband, and She says, "You're doing this just because you're attracted to him." And the writer leads you to believe all along that this guy is the strangler, and he's living in the attic and he's killing people. And one night he overhears the older woman telling that her suspicions to the other woman, and he makes like an awful remark that, "Man, I should strangle her," or something like that. So it makes you even believe that, wow, he's gonna kill the other tenant because she knows. But it turns out that the strangler is the actual woman that's renting the rooms. That's the twist. I liked it. It was pretty awesome. And the next story is called The Curse of the Sea Hag, which there's this boat which has a lot of money in it, I guess. And these three people try to rob it, and there's a sea hag in there. And she sort of kills both of the men, and the woman that's there, she curses her to stay on the boat for a year. And then when she returns to dock, another man boards, and I guess he's evil, and he takes her place. So when he takes her place, the woman that was cursed is free, and she can leave the boat. And now this guy is cursed for a year, and then he has to await when he docks again to see if he can get somebody to board the ship and take his place. So that's like the curse of this boat and this money that's on it. And then there's this story called The Voice in the Night. It's just 2 pages, and it's about this guy that loses his wife, and he keeps hearing voices, "Michael, oh Michael, I don't want to be dead," and he keeps hearing this stuff. So he hires a doctor to watch him at night and see if he can hear the voices. And he tells the doctor, "Did you hear that?" And he goes, "Yeah, I know where those voices are coming. They're coming from you. You're a ventriloquist, aren't you?" So it turns out that this guy w lost his wife in a legitimate car accident, and he does her voice, and he thinks it's her. So they put him in a straitjacket and zip him up and put him in the insane asylum. And that's those three, four stories, and they were all really good. My favorite was the one with the tenant in the attic. The art and stuff was just amazing. I liked it. And that was pretty much my last book. Unexpected 123. Do you have anything else, Chris?
Oh, sorry. I
Yeah.
thought I was muted. I have one more, yeah, if
Okay.
that's cool.
Yeah.
Same deal though. DC
Crisis.
era. This is the Outsider special. It's number one, but there only was one. It was a two-part story. It continues in Infinity Inc. special number one. So yeah, I have two kind of interesting teams with a lot of some might say C-listers, but B-listers maybe. Interesting collection of characters. So this is by Mike W. Barr with Chuck Patton. And Bob Smith. So it's kind of like the Outsiders team doing this one. And it starts off with Sylvester Pemberton, who used to be what was it, Stripe?
I think he was a Star Spangled Kid.
Star Spangled Kid, yeah.
Yeah.
He is in Markovia, which is where Geoforce is from. And I think so he's talking to someone about possibly, I guess he's working on a movie about the JSA in during the war. The JSA had passed through that area, but he's a bit concerned about the new Markovian prime minister, whose name is Vittings, who seems very isolationist, and he's concerned as to what his reaction to an American film crew would be. The woman from the film board says that, yeah, he's definitely a patriot, but he's also practical and realizes, the money that'll be brought in and stuff. So they plan to talk more after dinner. And Pemberton goes on to put on his he's going as going by Skyman at this time, so he puts on that costume and goes out to fly around, but he soon encounters some fighters, some fighter planes, and he's like, "Oh, maybe they're, upset by me violating airspace and that, and they're not used to having a human being flying around. I better land and explain myself." But they actually fire on him. He doesn't seem too upset by that. He says, "Sorry if I'm violating any local ordinances." But the guys that they're not too friendly. And Pemberton's trying to apologize and stuff, and the one guy walks up and hits him with the handle of his knife. So it kind of jumps forward to when they've got him behind bars, and he meets this prime minister who seems to be a little there seems to be more going on with him than appears on the surface. He has kind of a nonchalant attitude and says, "Oh, I apologize if our Imperial Rangers were a trifle overzealous." But he blows the cigar smoke right in Sylvester's face, and he said, "Well, this is no way to treat a guest." And someone from the background says, "Guest, do not flatter yourself. You are nothing more than a prisoner." And he reveals himself to be Baron Bedlam. So that's kind of like the prologue, the story, which is called From Here to Infinity. And we jump over to Los Angeles to the Infinity Inc. headquarters, who Sylvester's Skyman is a member of, and they are actually concerned about him. They can't get a hold of him and can't get an answer from the Markovian embassy in Washington. There was a Markovia and consulate in LA, and that's been closed. So they discuss for a little while what to do, they decide that Wildcat, Brainwave, and Jade are going to go check out the Markovian consulate, and then the rest of them are just going to kind of, stick around and man the headquarters, so to speak. But as they're leaving, Jade asks Brainwave, "Like, what good is this going to do if it's closed?" But Brainwave says, "Well, if the reason they closed has to do with what's gone on over there politically, maybe we'll find something out by going there." And they go there, and they end up running into members of the Outsiders. So there's like a brief moment because they're both kind of sneaking around. Wildcat and Katana have exchange a few blows before Black Lightning tells them to cut it out. And so the two groups have a little conversation, and then they end up realizing that they're kind of after they have similar goals, because obviously Geoforce is a member of the Outsiders and he's from Markovia. So the two groups in entirety meet up, and Halo is convincing Katana to apologize to Wildcat, and this is like the female Wildcat, and Jade is trying to convince Wildcat to apologize. So eventually, they succeed, and the two make up, and kind of as two warriors, kind of like make up quickly and kind of compare their wounds, or they show respect for to each other. So there's some more character interactions. One's kind of funny that Brainwave and Looker are having a telepathic conversation, and Jade, who's I think dating Brainwave at the time, gets a little jealous. But ultimately, after several pages of conversation, and they have like a conference call of sorts with Batman, who gives them some information that there might be some link with between the Markovian Prime Minister and a man called Abraham Lincoln Carlyle, who had recently unsuccessfully tried to run for president. And since then, it seems like he's been kind of working behind the scenes, and Batman doesn't really know what he's up to, but he doesn't suspect that he's up to any good. So that's what they get from Batman, and then so they basically from here they split up into two groups. So in each group is a mix of some members from both teams, of course, and some of them are going to head to Markovia, and then some of them are gonna have a little bit of a shorter trip to have a look in on this Abraham Lincoln Carlyle. To decide the mission, they Metamorpho changes himself into a giant coin, and Nuklon flips him. But the group going to check out Carlyle, it seems it's Nuklon, Jade, Metamorpho, Katana, Looker, but Mr. Bones, and I forget her name, Wind something. She's she had just recently what's she called? She had just recently joined the Outsiders, I think. Or maybe it was Infinity Inc. that she joined. No, it was Outsiders. It's
She had
Windfall.
that pink outfit or something.
Yep,
Like,
yeah.
yeah.
Windfall, her name is. Yeah, so she's with them. So they go to look into this guy, and when they're approaching the building where he lives, that they're surprised by some like large, thick vines that grow out of the earth in an unnatural way. So they have to deal with that, and the source of that turns out to be a woman named Mayflower, and it is the Force of July that they are encountering. These guys are a pretty funny bunch. They're one of those, like, the Outsiders have like a reputation for having some really crazy villains.
Rogues villain. They have that nuclear family and those, the Force of July.
Yeah,
They have that
Mike.
one guy, do you remember he's smoking a pipe?
Yeah, from the nuclear family.
Yeah.
Nuclear. But yeah, the Fourth of July, they're pretty wild. You have Lady Liberty, who is French because she's dressed like the Statue of Liberty, which was a gift from the French. Major Victory, Mayflower, Silent Majority, and Sparkler. Most of these guys like were used as cannon fodder, both basically by future writers in DC. Like they when they were looking for a character to kill off, most of these characters were used in that way later on, because they're such like bizarre minor Lady Liberty, Major Victory, Mayflower, they're all killed. Silent Majority too, I think. And Sparkler. Yeah, so most of them were killed at some point later on. But anyway, yeah, so they battle it out. Kind of a fun moment where Nuklon faces off with Silent Majority, and Silent Majority uses its duplication powers to make a whole bunch of himself and swarm all over Nuklon, who's got, like, he grows tall. So they battle it out over several pages, and Force of July actually comes out on top, and they radio in, Major Victory radios in to Carlisle, and Carlisle tells him, "Well, don't be overconfident, but it is for us, the living, to give our last full measure of devotion that the government of true Americans like us shall not perish from the earth." And then he tells them to bring them there. And so then we switch to Markovia, where the rest of the two groups are. And Geoforce kind of digs them a tunnel up close to, I guess it must be the headquarters of where the Prime Minister is at. So they deal with some of those special troops, the Imperial Rangers that Skyman encountered earlier on. Black Lightning has to kind of like talk Geoforce down. He's got a soldier in each hand, by the throat, because he's pretty riled up by what's being done in his home country. So Halo uses her distortion aura to help them kind of infiltrate. And they get to what looks like a dead end, but Geoforce knows that that's not the case. He knows of like a secret passage that they use to break into the castle, but they go in through the dungeon, and then they Geoforce is upset to see that his brother, the king, and his queen are being held cap excuse me, being held captive down there. And basically, this is a trap to get him to go off half-cocked like that. But when he pulls the cage apart and frees his brother, his brother's punches him in the face. Yeah, they start acting. Everyone starts acting really strange, and there's a lot of infighting. Black Lightning cracks Brainwave across the face, and Wildcat kicks Black Lightning in the back, and Baron Bedlam is up above, sort of overseeing it all. This trap and says, "Your emotions are as clay to be molded by the will of Baron Bedlam." But this is kind of strange, that this is going on, that he's able to do this, and the heroes are all attacking each other, just across the board, and taking each other out. And this goes on for several pages, and it gets to the point that Brainwave blasts Geoforce with a mental thing, and I think he's maybe the last one standing, and one of the soldiers shoots him in the back with a bunch of tranquilizer darts. And he's the last one that he's not quite out yet. The soldier's about to put him out for good. But Baron Bedlam walks down and says, "No, wait, I want him to see the true face of the man who defeated him." But Brainwave has actually pretty much figured it out at this point. He said, "I already know. Only one man has power to control emotions like that." And Baron Bedlam pulls off his mask, and he turns out to be the Psycho Pirate. To be continued in the pages of Infinity Inc. Special Number 1.
Better get in on that.
Yeah.
Are you reading this on the app?
I did actually. I think I actually own all three of those issues. But I was just
Ah.
like, hey, they're on the app, and I it's pretty exciting. Like, this is kind of like what they've done with when they added all the extra comics and broke away from their initial plan, is kind of like made what people have wanted from DC for so long, with they wanted an equivalent of Marvel Unlimited, you know?
That's what it sort of is now, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just like what people really wanted for so long, and then when there initially wasn't, I think a lot of people were disappointed, and it's pretty exciting to be like with DC, just to have that option with DC, because I get a little more excited about their back catalog to be able to dip
Yeah.
in there. Just
Plus,
like, I want to read this issue.
if you ever get the itch to read Red Hood and the Outlaws, you could do it.
Yeah, I think I read it like at least an issue or two of each of the incarnations, but yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. They put the new issues now on there a year after the fact, so I've started to read a little bit of. I didn't try to like because I was reading new issues when at first with Rebirth for a while. And I didn't try to catch up. I didn't try to jump back to where I left off and try to catch up with everything all the way back from there, just because it would take too long. So I just kind of like instead kind of jumped to stuff more recent. I am catching up on a few things that kind of lead into other stuff. Like I read No Justice because it leads into the new different Justice League books and stuff. And I read Metal because that was not too long before where they're currently at, with the stuff they're adding. And I caught up on I looked up to see where Wally West had made his different appearances, so I caught up on most of Titans and some of the Flash that he was appearing in, like the War of the Flash storyline stuff that leads into Heroes in Crisis and all that. So, I mean, I know I don't really try to avoid spoilers, so I already know what happens in Heroes in Crisis, and I know like stuff that's already I already know what's going on. So it's more like just reading instead of just going off of like, okay, well, this is what happens. It's more of like a
Well,
just,
it's like
okay, it's
it's
more
kind
seeing how it happened.
right, and you not only that, but you have a history with the characters, so you probably want to read the stuff you missed.
Yeah, and you
I
can
mean,
kind
just
of,
to know the history of it, you know?
yeah, even if you know, even knowing what happens, it's more like, okay, well, what's the context, and like making my own like
Decision, yeah.
opinion about how it actually is plays out, you know? So yeah, it's been kind of interesting.
Cool deal.
DC. Well, that's it from me.
All right. Well, we can wrap this one up. This has been Retrocast, and you can reach Chris at MythMakingETC. You could reach Rob at Rob Krieger. Sounds like Seeger, but it's not spelled like that.
No.
No.
KRYGIER, I think.
Yeah. We missed you. You're probably having fun with your kids today. Oh yeah, we didn't answer questions. Speaking of, damn it.
Oh,
We had a
I
few
think they're from
questions.
him, though, right?
Yeah, we had questions from Rob. We can do a lightning round.
I mean, can an employee of Geek Brunch and participate in Geek Brunch contests?
If he's not here, I would think so.
Yeah,
One was
sure.
what Charlton title would you like to own the most of, or I mean, would you like
Oh,
the
whose
first
first
appearance?
appearance of the Charlton Heroes?
Yeah.
I guess probably Blue Beetle. I mean,
For me, I own them all except I lied. I found out I don't own Space Adventures, whatever it is that's the Captain Atom, so that's the one I'm missing. Everything else I own. I own the first Fighting Five, which was Kirk's answer. I own the first Question, the first Peacemaker, the
Oh yeah, I
first Blue
forgot.
Beetle.
I think Question would be, I'd change my answer to the Question.
Yeah.
He's my favorite. And then Blue Beetle,
Nightshade,
probably.
I think I have her first appearance, but I don't remember what issue it was in. I think it's in Blue Beetle. And I think that wraps up the. Oh, Peter Kent and Thunderbolt is the other one of the action
Oh
heroes. Ozymandias. I can never pronounce it. Ozymandias.
yeah. Ozymandias. I think that's yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So he had one other question. When do you think we'll be able to record all together? I don't have any
I
idea.
think he said something. Is it a sign of the apocalypse when all of
Yeah.
us
I imagine, I mean, I'm just thinking of where his
maybe
kid.
when his once his kids go off to college.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's my answer is once they're off to college or in high school, because they'll be sort of, I mean, he'll still have to go to their events and stuff, but it'll be like they're with their friends, you know, when they, but I would think it's going to be harder for you, Rob. I mean, you're going to have, I mean, your kids are at an age where they're going to have all kinds of activities and things scheduled, so it'll be rough for you.
Yeah, make sure they get them into like video games and other stuff that don't require like going outside or going to like, avoid sports, like, because then they're gonna have to go to
What
like,
are you gonna turn them into like heathens on the iPad
indoor
or what?
kids, they're the
Indoor
best kind.
kids.
But I do see one other question he's got here. It was a quick one. What was your favorite ice cream flavor as a kid?
Orange sherbet. Or no, rainbow sherbet. That was my favorite as a kid. But it's not anything like that now. The I used to go to 31
What is
Flavors
it
and
now?
get rainbow sherbet and grape ice. What they had is grape flavored. Right now,
Oh, interesting.
I'm away from the ice cream and into the gelato. Yeah.
What's your favorite gelato?
Right now, I'm into birthday cake and cotton candy, which is a weird regression in kids' flavors, but they make a good match together. Whatever they
Interesting.
put in their cotton candy is very weird. It tastes so much like cotton candy, and it makes you smell like it. It's weird. It's probably not good for you. But after I eat it,
With
Barb's
some
always like,
chemical.
"You smell like cotton candy." And sure enough, I smell my skin and it like gets out of my pores and I smell like cotton candy.
Yeah, I'm not a huge dessert person. I don't have a huge sweet tooth. I'm more of a savory salt person. Like I'll eat loads of tortilla chips and hummus and stuff.
Yeah.
But the one exception to that is during the warmer weather, I do get into ice cream. And I'm super into peanut butter in general. So I love peanut butter, any kind of ice cream that has different peanut butter in it. And I don't know if that's like, I feel like I've always liked peanut butter. I don't know if I was, maybe if I asked my mom, she might remember. I don't know. I did like ice cream as a kid. I mean, obviously, but most kids do. But I don't know if I liked peanut butter back then or ice
Just
cream or not.
vanilla and chocolate.
Yeah. I do like vanilla, which my wife says is boring, but
I like
she's a
vanilla.
big chocolate person.
Vanilla's good, especially like if I choose to have a sundae or any kind of like blizzard, it has to be vanilla in there. It has to be the ice cream that I put in the blizzard,
That it's
or
mixed with, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a blizzard with with something other than vanilla is just weird.
Yeah. I mean,
But
chocolate's an alternative, but I'm not a real chocolate guy, so.
yeah, me neither. Which just is baffling to my wife.
If DC
But
hadn't sued Fawcett over Captain Marvel, do you think he would have continued to be the best-selling hero? And would Fawcett comics still exist today?
no.
I don't think so
I
either.
don't think so.
I think he was good for the time.
Yeah, I don't think his trajectory would have changed that much, honestly. I mean, maybe they would have invested more resources in him because he was like their top dude, where DC was like, well, we also have Superman and
Yeah.
these other characters, so maybe if they put a greater push behind him, but I don't know if it would have changed. It's an interesting question, though, but I don't know if I don't personally think it would have changed too much. But because I think, yeah.
All
That brings up
right.
questions about market and stuff too. But
Right.
anyway.
I'm at Mike Myers Brunch, and we are at geekbrunchpodcast.com, and we'll be back in 2 weeks, hopefully. At least two of us will be.
Yeah. Maybe. I got my fingers crossed. I think we might pull it off soon.
I like the idea.
If it had been a rainy day.
I like the idea of doing the movie thing again if we ever do that. That was fun.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Or just some kind of like, or get back to now it's getting to be the fall and winter and stuff. We can get back to like at least doing something like picking an issue, taking turns picking an issue or something.
Yeah.
Some kind
All
of.
All right, cool beans.
Okay.
Well, you have a good Sunday and we'll talk
You
to you
too.
Later. Bye.
Adios. Bye bye.